I like this one. This is some music that I picked up a long time ago from a good friend of mine from Nusrat Fateh, even after all this time, Ali Khan. That's a great, great song. It's called Longing. Welcome to Your Rancher Radio, the podcast. And today we're going to delve again, kind of what we did the last time. Go back to ancient history and look back at what might have been and learn from that and try to make some sense out of it. Because it's intriguing to me when I read the Urantia book. I don't care how many times you read it, you always end up going back and rediscovering some new kernel of truth that perhaps you didn't recognize before or didn't appreciate before. And certainly when I look around today and I see all the conflict that's going on in the world, some of it great. You know, new peace deals are being signed between countries that have been fighting for going back thousands of years, which is great. You know, the politics in America is challenging, but there are different ideologies at play, which are a part of the growth. I mean, one thing you learn from the Urantia book is not to get too hung up on any particular age, because, you know, on the norm, you know, in the big picture, you know, we have to have faith in the Most Highs. I was thinking and pondering the other day that I noticed that things always seem to get like they're going to get really bad, but they never quite get bad. And I am reminded that, you know, there are unseen forces at play that are helping and assisting and providing a coordinated effort as best they can, influencing human behavior in the best way that they can to bring out the best of humanity and the best of human behavior. I have to believe that. You have to remain optimistic. If Jesus were alive today, he would be optimistic, I think. I think he would look at every incident and look at it with the glass half full. Probably would look at all the different societal ills and say it's a learning process. Much of what we're going through today is unprecedented. We've not gone through it before. And so there's, you know, there's a lot that we have to do to get from being what we were to what we're going to be. And clearly, we'll outline this in just a moment here, because here are some kernels of truth. So I want to go back to what could have been. There are several statements in the Urantia book where it says that it's impossible to understand current conditions without taking into account certain things that occurred in the past that had a tremendous influence on why things are today. And one of those things is the fact that we don't have a planetary headquarters where there has been a nurturing of civilization for 500,000 years. And if our world had been operating among more normal lines, we would have at this point a civilization in the Persian Gulf that is headed by a planetary prince to whom we cannot see, but is supported by a staff of semi-material beings with whom we can see. And it is that paradigm that would have existed long enough for us to develop farther along than we are today. The Urantia book says that we are a full dispensation behind, and that's true, because that structure, that plan, which I'll outline here shortly, never came to fruition. So man basically stayed savage for a far longer period of time. And even with the help of Adam and Eve, the biological uplifters that arrived 40,000 years ago, which we discussed previously at great length, they too also faltered, and their impact and influence was also curtailed. So we're living with a kind of a situation where humanity was deprived, simply deprived of extraterrestrial or extra spiritual assistance that would have normally been afforded a planet such as ours. But look, you know, we're an experimental world. We're a decimal planet, right? The revelators say that we are unique, and we are certainly unique. And in that uniqueness, we were granted the opportunity to host the Creator Son on his final seventh bestowal mission. And so that's something that we can be, that we can take great, great comfort in. So let me just read, and then I'll throw in some comments here. This is from Paper 50, Section 4. So a planetary prince is not visible to mortal beings. It is a test of faith to believe the representations of the semi-material beings of his staff. But these schools of culture and training are well adapted to the needs of each planet, and there soon develops a keen and laudatory rivalry among the races of men in their efforts to gain entrance to these various institutions of learning. So what they're saying is that, you know, had things proceeded along more normal, you know, a more normal way, path, then right now we would be human beings wanting to get in to these schools where the planetary prince has, and it would have been in the Persian Gulf because that's where Dalmatia was before the rebellion. And we, at this point of our civilization, we would be going, wanting, that would be university to us. We would consider that university. Everyone would want to go to university. And this university would be so established in our society, in our culture, having gone back a half a million years. Think about that. Think about it. And the semi-material staff and their offspring are part of this civilization that has emerged as literally our planetary headquarters of culture. I'll go on. From such a world center of culture and achievement, there gradually radiates to all peoples an uplifting and civilizing influence which slowly and certainly transforms the evolutionary races. Meantime, the educated and spiritualized children of the surrounding peoples who have been adopted and trained in the prince's schools are returning to their native groups and, to the best of their ability, are there, establishing new and potent centers of learning and culture, which they carry on according to the plan of the prince's schools. Under the benign rule of a planetary prince, augmented by the material suns, which are Adam and Eve, and punctuated by the periodic missions of the paradise suns, including someone of the likes of Jesus, Christ Michael, the Creator Son, the mortal races on an average world of time and space will successively pass through the following seven developmental epochs. So putting all this into context, if things had worked out normally in this grand plan, then we would have had a planetary prince establishing a civilization of culture. And in this case, they attempted to do that in the Persian Gulf, we are told in the Revelation. Then it would have been later augmented by a biological pair, Adam and Eve, who in fact came. And they actually settled in two places. One was off the coast of Latakia, which is northwest Syria. And also, when that garden fell, they went to the Babylonian area, the Tigris and the Euphrates, what we now know is probably Baghdad, or certainly close to that proximity. And that was the second garden from which the Adamic race emerged and tried to set in course the biological uplifting of man so that he could be more spiritual and also in some ways more physically robust. And so that was in coincidence with the modern age. Guess what? That was when the last ice age ended. So there we go, the appearance of modern man. Even science recognizes the appearance of the true modern man occurred about 40,000 years ago. How coincidental is that, that it just happens to coincide with the appearance of Adam and Eve? And then prior to that, having the cultural center, of course, in our world, it didn't survive, and we've talked about that. So all of this would have come into play. In a normal world, we would have had a center of culture, we would have had a Adam and Eve, and we would have had a visit by the very Son, the Creator Son, who has made all this possible. The Son of God, the Son of the living Creator on our world. And all of this kind of happened here. That's what's amazing about it, is it is in our culture. It is in our religion. In the Judeo-Christian religion, I have just outlined pretty much what you can read in the Old Testament and part of the New Testament. We had Nodites. We had giants come down and make daughters of men for their wives. We had an Adam and Eve and a Garden of Eden. And we had all of the stuff that is part of our legend, the Greeks and their ideas about these divine beings coming down and getting women impregnated. All of that comes from somewhere. Every religion is influenced by it. Even the Indian religions, the old religions, there's no end to the stories. And they all come from this fact that we are under the administration and ministry of a unseen, seraphic, most high group of personalities, which is what the Urantia book says. So we've had some missteps because we had a rebellion, and our planetary prince sided with Lucifer. And we had another misstep because Adam and Eve became impatient in their plan and abrogated the divine will by directly mating with one of the human beings. And then we had Christ Michael come. Jesus showed. He was born as a babe, and he brought the love of God into religion, and he taught that every man was a child of a loving father, which revolutionized religion, really. It made it a personal event. And he spoke truth. He told us about our souls, and he told us about what it takes to be a consecrated believer in this Father, and it is by our faith that we are saved. So all these things did transpire. And so we read on where it talks about the stages of man. The stages of man. Well, number one, there are seven stages of man. You tell me where you think we are at. The first stage is the nutrition epoch. The pre-human creatures and the dawn races of primitive man are chiefly concerned with food problems. These evolving beings spend their waking hours either in seeking food for food or in fighting offensively or defensively. The food quest is paramount in the minds of these early ancestors of subsequent civilizations. Well, we know that's true about ourselves. We know that probably up to, you know, at some point in the not too distant past, that we knew how we were able to guarantee that we would have enough food. Maybe the 15th century, the 16th century, in some ways, but maybe not so much. Really, the 20th century is when we finally figured out how we could make sure we had enough food as a society. Would you not agree? So then we move on to the security age. Just as soon as primitive man can spare any time from the search for food, he turns this leisure to augmenting his security. More and more attention is devoted to the technique of war. Homes are fortified, and the clans are solidified by mutual fear and by the inculcation of hate for foreign groups. Self-preservation is a pursuit which always follows self-maintenance. So we're stuck in some ways, in some areas, we're still going through that. But I would say mostly in the more developed countries, we've gone beyond the security age. We've already solidified our defenses. So we're past that. There are still some areas of the world where it's probably true that security is still perhaps in the Middle East and Sub-Saharan Africa, perhaps. And now the material comfort era. And this is the age I think that we're in. So this would be the third mortal epoch in a normal civilization. After food problems have been partially solved and some degree of security has been attained, the additional leisure is utilized to promote personal comfort. Luxury vies with necessity in occupying the center of the stage of human activities. Such an age is all too often characterized by tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness. So I would say that it's probably a fair assessment to say that we're in that material age in the developed countries. I would say that's a pretty fair assessment. So moving on then, we have the four remaining epochs that the revelators say that human beings go through. Number four, the quest for knowledge and wisdom. And that would be the next stage of humanity, the quest for knowledge and wisdom, having emerged from the material comfort era. And already you can see that there are starting to see seeds of this throughout the world, no, though you'd have to search somewhat hard. I think we'll see within different groups, different pockets, there is a real concern, I think, now among the more educated class that far too many people in our society, in the main, in general, are not very well educated. And that could pose problems for the future. But for now, the next stage of mortal epics, and if we had had more assistance, perhaps, from the spiritual administrators of our world, then we would be farther along, and it would be much clearer that we were searching for knowledge and wisdom. But such is not the case. And then beyond that epoch, the epoch of knowledge and wisdom and the quest for it, comes stage five, the epoch or the epoch of philosophy and brotherhood. And then the age of spiritual striving, which is the sixth epoch. And then the era of light and life. The planetary prince and his staff still foster the spiritual and philosophic domains of activity. Adam and Eve pay particular attention to the physical, scientific, and economic status of the realms. And both groups equally devote their energies to the promotion of the arts, social relations, and intellectual achievements. During this age of advanced evolution, Adam and Eve become what might be called joint prime ministers of the glorified realms. And that's how it might have worked out, but it didn't. And so we're faced with the reality that we are essentially a rogue world. But we have a revelation now, and that revelation fills that whole period in. And what is the takeaway? What is the takeaway of what we talked about here, you know, on this podcast today? That under normal circumstances, we might be farther along. We wouldn't be dealing with a lot of the problems that we're having in our world today with evil despots and corrupt politicians and massive drug use and all the slave trade and sex trade and all the evil that permeates this planet. It's just, you know, it's mind-boggling when you think about how far off track we are. But by the same token, I think that one of my most favorite lines is from the movie Contact, where the line is, you know, you're capable of such great dreams and achievements, but by the same token, you're also very dark. You know, we are a very complex species, to be sure. And much of that has to do with the fact that we've essentially had to survive, and most of what we have today is through our evolutionary process. So the evolutionary process and the takeaway, we have to be patient. That's it. That's the takeaway. This is a long process. Even the Noddites, one-time former mortals like ourselves, who had gone through the process of passing away on their spheres, resurrected, gone on to the mansion worlds, and then volunteered to help and became those 100 members of the prince's staff on our world. For 250,000 years they existed here. Van, which is what the name Lake Van comes from. Nod, who was, of course, the east of Eden, land of Nod. Those are still in our heritage for a reason. But the takeaway is we don't have to be in a hurry about the revelation. It's going to take time. And until next time, thank you again for joining me on the Urantia Radio Podcast. Look forward to it. We've got some good programs coming up, and I appreciate you following us and stopping by. Until next time. Thank you.
Johnny, I'm